talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. In 1620, the Pilgrim Fathers and the Mayflower set sail from Plymouth to explore the New World. More than 400 years later, Darren from Plymouth explores today's new world. Darren from Plymouth is D.D. Denslow, and he's digging deeper on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. Yes, this is me, D.D. Denslow, and we're on Digging Deeper. And it's a beautiful sunny day in Plymouth. Plymouth, the origin of the New World, not the New World Order, the New World. But we do apologize for the order bit that came along afterwards. And we're here at TNT Radio to expose this, to talk about this, to try and understand this and get the truth out there and counteract the narrative of the mainstream. So what am I going to talk about in this little opening 5 minutes before I introduce my first guest who is waiting before me? Alexander Pohl is back. We'll probably be talking about climate change, some of the banking infrastructure in the UK that I've had a quick look at, and we'll see where our conversation goes. I want to really pick up from where we finished off last time. It was such a good conversation. And then coming up at 2 p.m., I've got fellow teacher, fellow bigot, as she likes to call herself, and now friend, because through our interactions on TNT, me and Sarah Plumley have got a little bit more pally, and it's great. It's great. I love talking to Sarah. So she's coming up at 2 p.m. Now, one thing that may not make a big contribution to the conversations that I'm going to have today, at least, and unusually, will be vaccines, although I'm sure I'll try and find a way of squeezing it in, vaccines and excess deaths. There was a big protest in London today. It was outside of the BBC headquarters. You know, there's lots of photos put up. We had speakers, including Andrew Bridgen, gave a fantastic speech. He seems to have the handcuffs have been taken off him. Now he's sort of been expelled from the Conservative Party, still an MP, and he gave a great speech, no holds barred, and so did Matt Letizier, calling out the MSN and in particular the propaganda machine, the government mouthpiece that is the BBC, and all done right outside their headquarters. And how has the BBC reacted to this in its reporting? Zilch. It hasn't said anything. I haven't seen a mainstream news bulletin or a video being put out by the BBC. I'm almost certain it hasn't been on the mainstream TV. It wasn't on the 6 p.m. news on Saturday. Pretty certain of that. I can't find it anywhere on their webpage, although I haven't done an extensive look yet again today. And yeah, it was right outside their headquarters. But not only that, there have been some mainstream publications that have commented on this protest, and you can imagine exactly what they said. Oh, look at all these anti-vaxxers, all these anti-vaxxers protesting about vaccine injuries. Yeah, the vaccine injured protest in London on Saturday outside the BBC being described by the few MSM that have mentioned it in passing as a bunch of anti-vaxxers. The protest was full of vaxxers. That's why it was a vaccine injured protest. It's insane the level of gaslighting that is pushed out with regards to the vaccine issue. And all the while, latest figures have just been published by the ONS for the first 3 weeks of excess deaths in the UK. And I was shocked. I was actually taken aback. I had to breathe a second when I saw that over 2,333 people on average for the first 3 weeks of this year have died extra in the UK. So that's 7,000 excess deaths in the last 3 weeks. And guess what the government of UK's official response is? We do not We think that the ONS, the Office of National Statistics Figures, we don't take them seriously. We don't believe them. We think that they're wrong. Yeah. But back in 2020, every single death was sacred. Every life had to be saved. Every single death from COVID prevented. Now we've got 7,000 excess deaths for the first 3 weeks of January. And this is a remarkable, quite a very significant increase on what we was reporting in 2022, when there was obviously a problem with about 1,500 extra people dying every week. No one's interested. No one's batting an eyelid. BBC isn't even interested in the protest right outside its main headquarters, where people were smashing up photos of their loved ones that had passed away, and they're attributing it to a vaccine that nobody wants to investigate. Okay, we've got Alex Pohl coming up. Sorry for the cheery intro on a Monday, but you know, no one else is reporting it, so TNT have got to do that job. If you have any suggestions for a possible guest or host that you'd like to hear on TNT Radio, or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website and help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT. This is Digging Deeper with me, Didi Denslow. And I've got Alexander Pohl. I keep calling you Alex. I do apologize, Alex. Alexander Pohl, he's a returning guest. He was with me about 2 weeks ago. And I actually invited him back because I wanted to continue on with our conversation. It was very well received, Alexander. How are you, mate? Good to see you again.
I'm really well. It's really quite a privilege to be back on again so soon.
A privilege? Oh, I like to hear that. That makes me feel so much better, especially on a Monday morning. That compliment, I'll take it as, will drive me through the week. We haven't really massively agreed any topics that we were going to talk about. I've got a fairly blank set of notes, which is unusual for me. I'm normally very, very well prepared. But I have got this story that I noticed this morning with regards to wind power, something that I know that you've been involved in your activities of recent. The price of wind power could rise in the coming years, with energy specialist Cornwall Insight warning the upcoming contracts for difference, which is a CFD scheme. That's a UK scheme about funneling money into renewables, could see a drive and an upturn in generation costs. And actually, I could go through this article, but it's basically saying that the cost for manufacturing, maintaining, and generating electricity from wind turbines is going to increase in the immediate future, with uncertainty around higher auction prices, inflation, cost of technology, construction, and obviously energy prices like coal and fossil fuels, which are needed to build wind power turbines, something that they don't tell you. Are we going to see more of this in the renewable energy sector as the price of actually putting these systems in place? Is that going to massively increase? And will that make it maybe, just maybe, less sustainable for economies to take that route, the net zero route?
Oh, you really ask difficult questions there. I think that headline is very topical because, you know, the concept in the baseline is about money. You know, I thought it was about carbon emissions. Who cares about the money, right? If we're actually all going to die, our money is worthless because dead people can't spend. So why do they keep talking about money, cost? You know, like I said, the banks invented this form of slavery called debt. Now we're being introduced to a new way that they can take money out of our pockets. I just saw a headline about Prince Charles, King Charles.
Yeah, I can't say it either.
Yeah, long live the king, you know. Photo, a very disturbing article about the UK government after 5, 10, 15 U-turns and changes of prime minister have now agreed 8 gigawatts, as you would get from Back to the Future, of new offshore wind power, all of which is in the Crown Estate. And if you don't know about the Crown Estate, just Google it. You'll see the UK's largest landowner It is the king, all of the king's land, which he did not buy. He does not pay rent for, but he takes a bit of money. And he's going to get $1.2 billion a year for these 8 gigawatts of new offshore wind power, which Rishi Sunak and his government miraculously just approved. But don't worry, the king will not take this money that is not his in the first place for himself. He's just going to give it back to the government, which approved all of these controversial wind farms on his own land. But of course, it's not the king's money. It is the citizens, the subjects of the UK who will pay every single penny. And of course, these wind farm companies are not owned by UK Citizen PLC. They are owned by BlackRock, by the global elite families. So again, you know, all of these headlines, like the BBC example, you know, either they don't report it, or if they do report it, they misrepresent it in such a fundamental way that the average citizen, I feel sorry for them, because there's no way you can see through this this web of deceit. So I think that the price of energy is going to skyrocket, because the average citizen is to be made bankrupt. And electricity is so fundamental, you know. You can't heat your house if you have a heat pump without electricity. You can't run your iPhone. You can't run your Tinder account. You know, everything is dependent on electricity. So just turn it up, and then you shall own nothing. And as long as I medicate you, you'll be happy.
Soma will be the way, Alexander.
Exactly.
I've actually always wanted to try a bit of Soma, just so I know what it's like to not care about anything. The contracts for difference scheme, have you heard of that? I know it's a UK scheme. Are you aware of this? It was the first time I come across this morning.
Yeah, I used to do deals with Contract for Difference. I mean, Contracts for Difference are just guaranteeing companies a price, even if the market doesn't perform to that price. So what it meant is they would set a price which was made up in fantasy, but it had to be high enough for banks, again, my favorite actor in this theater of deceit, that the banks would lend money. Of course, it's not their own money. It's the depositors' money, or it's pension fund money or whatnot. So it's just a tool of financial engineering to create fake loans and to get things to be funded that really shouldn't be funded in a normal free market. And we all know that we are not free, that basically fraudulent deals could get funding from banks that shouldn't.
And it gets given legitimacy by being published. You know, it's got a nice name, Contracts for Difference. It's published by the UK government. It's put on their tender portal for people to go and compete for work, and it's managed. And then therefore, it's given legitimacy in the eyes of the public that this is a fair, best deal that the public can get for, I don't know, whether it be, in this case, wind power, but, you know, for renewables in general. With regards to specifically wind power, can you briefly, before we go to the next break, sort of break down what the life cycle is for one of these turbines? I'm not asking necessarily if you'd attribute any cost to it, but, you know, how are they manufactured, and then what happens to them in 30, 40, 50 years' time?
Well, I mean, it's very fascinating, to say the least, because I've mentioned it last time, they're a little bit like mushrooms. So the life cycle of a wind farm actually starts long before you actually see it, during the time that these massive companies and investors start lobbying and arguably influencing financially through other means to get their permits. So, you know, there's a bit of a hidden bit. But when you get to the actual turbines themselves and the infrastructure that goes with it, it's fascinating. You know, concrete, you have massive foundations of concrete hidden away underneath the ground. These are thousands of tons. And the making of cement and the curing of cement is a massive release of CO2. You've got tons of steel reinforcement in the foundations. The towers are made of steel. This steel is usually produced in coal-fired steel plants in China. I have pictures of shipments coming from steel plants in China to be delivered here in Sweden. You have the blades themselves. They're made of plastic, carbon fiber, high energy intensive sources, plastics. There is some bisphenol A, but there's also PFAS, you know, Teflon, this stuff that's really topical in the news for being super toxic. And you've got lots of rare earth metals. There are, you know, pictures of, I forget what it's called in China. There's a Death Valley in China. You can see it, lots of YouTube videos. It's like hell on earth. And that's where a lot of the materials are refined that go into wind turbines. Tons of electronics, SF6, a super environmentally toxic and greenhouse gas emitting novel gas, something that we humans invented that's used for switch gears and fire suppression. You've got thousands of meters and kilometers of copper, that is all of the cables that are trenched into the ground. You've got quarries worth of material to create new roads and foundations. Sand, you know, sand is a massive conflict material all around the world as we use up so much sand for cement. That gets shipped in from all over the place. So you've got all these materials which are neither environmentally friendly nor are they climate friendly. And of course, they come at great cost from great distances. And they shift the balance of power with regards to both who is benefiting from these wind farms and who is being damaged, because it is fascinating how much comes from China. You know, I would argue that 70 to 80% of a wind turbine and the materials that go into it is coming from China. But these Chinese companies are being heavily influenced by Western powers. So, you know, BlackRock, who is behind a lot of things, they have great influence in China. I mean, China, the communist government in China is probably only in power due to the toppling of the previous regimes by Western influences. And Mao, who's one of the greatest murderers, killing over 30, 40 million people through starvation and other means, he then became a puppet of these Western powers that destroyed the old China and put the new one in. And as we dematerialize Europe, both jobs and industry, we ship everything to China and then we ship it all back. So it's a really fascinating repeating model. You know, we did it with cheap Matchbox cars. We then replicated it with our H&M t-shirts. And now we're doing it with all of our renewable energy infrastructure.
And it sounds like, I mean, just the cement alone. I mean, I think concrete and cement is one of the number one contributors to human CO2 output. If you go on Google or whatever and you have a look at the major causes of human CO2 emissions, you'll find that cement and concrete production is right up there. But you've just described sort of the manufacturing process and the supply chain involved for making, you know, one wind power turbine, and all I can see is so many of those links, almost all of them, are just increasing the amount of CO2 that we're producing, which is supposed to be the, you know, the bad guy gas. Forget about the SF6, which was that sulfur hexafluoride. That sounds like a pretty I'm a chemist, a pretty terrible compound to be putting into the atmosphere. And again, you've also mentioned how BlackRock are heavily involved, and actually that's where I'm taking our conversation next after this break, Alexander, because I want to just have a quick look at how ESG influences, say, the production or building of wind power turbines. So stay with us and come right back after this break on TNT Radio.
Trovoy Morich on TNT Radio.
From my hometown, Chicago, I was just reading that Mayor Lori Lightfoot, her campaign was caught sending emails to Chicago public schools and Chicago public school teachers asking them to offer extra credit to students who volunteered to get Lori Lightfoot reelected. And then you've got like these progressive liberals shouting at conservatives or whatnot, anyone who's not left liberal, for being biased, for not being neutral or objective. And look what they're doing. And she says, it was simply a mistake. They don't even own up to it. They're like, yeah, you know, we were out of line. What we did was wrong. No, it was a mistake. Yeah, just unbelievable.
For Voye Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swinging in racism.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
Massive anti-government protests are exploding in Peru, joining Europeans already rebelling over climate and farm clampdowns. Older cars and trucks are banned by Peru's socialist leaders, and food prices are soaring. World unrest is erupting over climate fascism, lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to TNT. This is me, Dee Dee Denzler, and I'm talking to Alexander Pohl. He's an ex-finance guy, and I'm going to chuck a quick little story that I've found about ESGs. It's something that's come out of Davos, and that was the revelation that $4 billion have been pulled out of BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, as a direct consequence of a political backlash against ESG. Mr. Fink, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, has actually pushed back saying, don't worry about it. I actually received $230 billion in investment directly as ESG funds over the course of last year. That's right. The net inflows for the biggest asset manager in 2023 from ESG investing were more than 50 times that of the outflows caused by skeptics taking their money elsewhere. Now, I don't know how to interpret that information. I would like to think after the first, like, great, there's a bit of backlash. There's a backlash against all this woke stuff, this ESG stuff. But Larry Fink saying, it seems to be quite well supported because I'm taking in $250 billion almost in income. What's your experience of ESG? How deeply embedded is it in the corporate world? Does the information I just give you sort of ring true to your own understanding of ESG in business?
The first thing is you probably have to go back to fundamentals. What is ESG? What is it supposed to deliver? And why does it exist? And why is it really popular at the moment? I mean, ESG for your listeners is environmental, social, governance. So these are three thematic areas that have been lumped together. Governance is, are you ethical? Are you, you know, do you play by the rules? Do you treat your employees fairly, etc.? Social is how do you interact with your local communities? Do you bleed them dry and or do you help them, that type of thing? And then environment is how do you interact with the environment? Do you rape and pillage or do you plant forests or whatnot? So, you know, the purpose of this is supposed to be a framework that if you work within it, the world will be a better place. So, you know, the principles of ESG are virtuous. It's a virtue. It's a feel good subject matter area. However, as we learned with all things that make you feel good, they can be exploited. So the Larry Fink example was perfect. They figured out that as long as you call something ESG, you can pretty much do anything you like. Because who's going to question it? It's ESG, right? You know, do you want the world to, yeah, to burn? And pension funds, you know, places where all of us entrust our money, you know, they have almost carte blanche to push money towards ESG. And because no one is checking, it has essentially created the green financial crisis. So 2008, what was it about? It was about the American dream. Every human being has the right to shelter. It's a basic human right to own your home. Who cares if you can't afford it? Because, you know, it will own your home and things will only get better. So we're in a situation where as long as it's ESG labeled, and there are many companies that are provide these labels, which are fraudulent for the most part, you know, then it creates an environment where you can just piss money away, skim, because, you know, all the companies, Larry Fink, it isn't BlackRock's money. It's other people's money, and he just skims for himself and his employees. So, you know, everyone is just using ESG to justify almost a blank check. And, you know, the things that we've been uncovering here in Sweden, there's a town, it's called Östersund. Östersund is a little council of 60,000 people. They... using green bonds are an ESG financial product where you borrow money from the capital markets. They were able to raise 400 million euros of debt, and it's being burned for ridiculous projects that are anything but ESG. And you call it out, you get canceled. You challenge the people who did the fraudulent labeling. And they stand back and go, whoa, you know, I'm just a party to this, you know. No one reports anything. So we're in a world at the moment where I guarantee you trillions of dollars are going into ESG, $230 billion to BlackRock, and that money is being burned on environmentally destructive, socially destructive, and ethics and governance destroying projects. But it's a beautiful virtuous circle because those profits all get recycled back to all of the scumbags. They're not scumbags. They're just misguided individuals like King Charles III.
Scumbag.
Wow.
You just mentioned one.
So it's crazy and it's only getting worse because if you say ESG, someone is greenwashing, they just say, oh no, you're just not a team player. You know, you just want us all to die, don't you? Or live in caves or whatever the latest argument is why you think the iPhone 27 is the most pointless planet-destroying device and soul-destroying device as kids start taking pictures of their bits and sending them to pedophiles willingly because, you know, they've been able to manipulate this tech-enabled system to get us to sort of... kill ourselves. It's really crazy. And ESG is just so beautiful at the moment because just Google Guardian and ESG and see how much propaganda Guardian is writing. Pro ESG, more money. The government, Davos, everyone says more money, more money, more money. No governance. No one check. So so ESG is a big fraud. It's a big fraud.
Yeah. It's a fraud and it's a and I've got the description here. We're coming up to a break, so I'm not going to read through, but it's a classic
case of inversion. I mean, they've just got a bit here, you know. Companies are expected to be good stewards of water resources, have concerns about deforestation, biodiversity disclosures, etc. There's loads of etc. And they all fall under the E of the ESG. And you think BlackRock, as you've just said, have created their own Death Valley in China. That doesn't sound very environmentally friendly from the investment firm that pushes and effectively controls the ESG narrative. Okay, when we come back, we'll carry on looking at the financial institutes, and in particular the infrastructure bank in the UK, which I understand you know a lot more about than I do, Alexander. So stay right with us on TNT Radio.
I got a news flash for you.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a quick look at your TNT headlines. A top American general has warned Washington must step up its game in Latin America if it wants to compete with the growing influence of Russia and China in the region. Pakistan says it's not worried about repercussions from the West after striking a deal with Moscow to import cheap Russian oil. And the walls are closing in on US President Joe Biden after the FBI reluctantly searched his home in Delaware and recovered more classified documents.
Silence for thinking differently? Silence for thinking differently? Not here. Silence for asking questions? Not here. Not here. Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to TNT. This is me, DD Denslow. I'm talking with Alexander Pohl, an ex-finance guy, very much involved in environmental issues now, and he's seen the dark side. He's been behind the scenes. And one of the, you sent me a load of emails. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to open most of those links for some reason. It was just giving me the 404 error. But I did go and have a look into what the UK Infrastructure Bank is, which you're going to talk about in a sec. It's a British state-owned investment bank. It's intended to help with the UK government's plan to reach net zero carbon by 2050 and to support economic growth in regional and local sectors across the UK. The Chancellor of the Exchequer at the time, a certain Mr. 5'8 Sunak, stated that the bank would be tasked to invest in sectors such as renewable energy, carbon capture, storage, and transportation. So it's all about net zero. Tell me more, please, Alexander.
Well, I will tell you that this isn't the first time that the UK government has duped the British citizen and the world with regards to its green ambitions. There was something called the Green Investment Bank, which was founded probably about 10 years ago. And it had a very similar remit to the UK Infrastructure Bank. It was to remove the risk of investing in green and renewable energy projects. And basically what it ended up being was a carte blanche for investors to transfer risk to the British taxpayer and then siphon money off for private companies. That Green Investment Bank was sold off by the UK government to an Australian bank called Macquarie Bank. And for your listeners who live in Australia, they might know who Macquarie Bank is. But Macquarie Bank is one of the darkest banks in the world. They are behind massive infrastructure schemes from power stations to renewable energy to airports, etc. They control a lot of the real assets. Real assets are like buildings and properties active in the infrastructure world. And they bought it from the UK government and then basically handed it over to the Chinese. And the Chinese nuclear group, which is perhaps not the nicest sounding entity, ended up buying into massive green investment bank wind farms here in Sweden, to the point that they own 8% of Sweden's wind power generation. So, you know, a lot of these government entities are fronts for cronyism and nepotism. And this UK infrastructure bank is amazing because there's a company, it's called CityFibre. They are responsible for laying fiber broadband. And everyone thinks that's great. Every house needs to have fiber. But actually what they don't realize is that that's the backbone of the digital control infrastructure. You need a fiber broadband infrastructure to do 5G across the country. You need fiber broadband infrastructure for the surveillance society. Who is making that possible? The UK government through the UK Infrastructure Bank. So no one realizes that this sinister agenda is being led by these government-led entities. And the UK Infrastructure Bank is also heavily funding all of these wind farms. King Charles III's 8 gigawatts of wind power will be heavily funded and supported by the UK Infrastructure Bank, either the cables or the actual projects themselves, or the contracts for difference for buying the electricity. And it funnily, it turns out that one of my old CEO of HSBC, his name is John Flint, he seems like a nice guy. He is the CEO of the UK Infrastructure Bank. And then it turns out that at the same time, not on his LinkedIn profile, not on any English language newspapers like The Guardian or FT, he becomes the director, the board director of one of the Wallenbergs, that mysterious family that I mentioned last time. They own a bank called SEB Bank. SEB Bank is a massive bank that no one has heard of. It's out of Sweden. It banks all of the Swedish government companies like Vattenfall, and all of Wallenberg companies like Ericsson, ABB. Those are all SEB customers. And he's the director of a commercial private bank. How can the CEO of a public bank that is basically using the UK government as a providing guarantees, providing taxpayer money for loans to a bunch of private companies, and then at the same time, without actually publicizing it, he's the director of this super sinister dark bank out of Sweden, where, you know, if some of the people who feel that there is something that is happening in the background, well, this is one of the families that's doing it. I talked to The Guardian, I talked to the FT, I sent an email to the UK government, to MPs, to the, it's the business enterprise and the BEIS committee. I sent it to all the members of the BEIS committee who are like top UK government. I assume my email was filtered out because I didn't get a single response. So how can we have such a flagrant example of conflict of interest, corruption, private enterprise, the private companies influencing the UK government and not a peep? I even got in touch with some of the NGOs like BankTrack, which is supposed to, like, you know, hammer unethical banks, and no one has acted on it. So this green infrastructure bank, so the GIG, which we had, which was sold off, you can Google it. It basically went to China. Suddenly there's a new incarnation. Now it's called the UK Infrastructure Bank. The projects they are doing are 100% aligned with the World Economic Forum, digitization of the world, you know, the dark, sinister agenda. No one notices. And then there's this 100% obvious conflict that if someone just, you know, made it public, the whole house of cards would fall, and not a word. So it's like your BBC example about the actual vaccine pro people who realized they were being duped and spoke out. I am, in a way, the renewable energy, climate, green agenda equivalent. No one says that, you know, the intention of saving the planet is not good. But if someone says I'm saving the planet and I'm actually raping it, what are we supposed to do? You know, so that's why I keep speaking out. And the UK Infrastructure Bank could be that first domino, because it's so obvious, and it's Rishi Sunak, the PM's own, you know, nail in his coffin of ethics and reputation. Aside from the fact that, you know, his father-in-law is the main shareholder of Infosys, another super dark digital company that is behind tons of really dubious schemes that have dual use.
Yeah, you could go. Yeah, I mean, you're talking of scumbags. You mentioned scumbags, and that's the reason why you didn't get a reply, because these people are actually a criminal element that rule over us. You know, you mentioned Rishi Sunak. You could go really, really deep into Rishi and what his plans are and how he got into the position that he's in. And it's all from his father, the like you said, the chief shareholder of Infosys. The BEIS is the Department of Energy and Industrial Strategy. I love how they have these names. I worked in the public sector for about 2.5 years before they sacked me. Anyone who's listening to me, I can see Murray in the studio sort of smiling away and nodding his head. You can understand why it didn't work out for me in a place like the public sector. You brought up the digital stuff. We're about to go to a break. I'm just formulating a question in my head, but that's where I want to go rather than what I had originally planned, which was, I can't remember now, WEF and Davos. Actually, it'll probably tie together quite nicely. So we're going to talk about 5G, the infrastructure that's being laid in terms of cables, what 5G is capable of. And actually, I had a guy on last week, and he believes that the injections that we've all been received and has turned everybody into an antenna in preparation for the 5G. I'll be interested to know what your thoughts on that. Bit conspiratorial, bit of a tangent, but hey, stay right with us. We'll be back in a minute on TNT Radio.
Having a gas stove is like a car idling in your living room? What the?
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Only on CNN, CNN's climate reporter Bill Ware had this to say about having a gas stove in your home.
The science is showing us that having a gas stove in a small apartment, especially with bad ventilation, it's like having a car idling there. And if you have young kids, it can affect cognitive abilities and as well as asthma.
That's right. According to CNN, a gas stove in your home is like a car idling, making your children dumb and sick. But wait, the Washington Post say scientists say a growing body of research shows gas stoves pose a threat to the planet. Do you have a killer gas stove in your home? For the sake of your health and the planet, get rid of it! So say the experts. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Here's a fun fact for you. The average chameleon can point their eyes in two different directions. On the other hand, the average human can't. So unless you're a chameleon, there's absolutely no way you can focus on texting and driving at the same time. So don't do it. Unless you're a chameleon.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
D.D. Denslow is digging deeper on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. This is Digging Deeper with me, D.D. Denslow. I'm here talking to Alexander Pohl. We've had a sort of good look at the UK Infrastructure Bank, ESGs, wind power and renewables in general. You know, what a scam they are. They never, ever talk about what's involved in the manufacturing in terms of carbon dioxide, for example, when building these massive projects. So that sort of leads us straight to two things. You, and I'm sure it was in a private conversation, mentioned to me that actually behind the curtains of the World Economic Forum lies China and the CCP. Is there any truth to that statement? Is the CCP got a lot of strings, a lot of, you know, puppet strings that they're pulling at the World Economic Forum, even if their presence there isn't actually that visible?
I mean, I think, like many things, we're always being directed towards a visible enemy. Something like, you know, why they invented football, you know, soccer, you know, that's a manufactured sport. Sorry to say to some of your listeners, to misdirect the anger from the masters towards each other. You know, I always was amazed that people would beat the living daylights out of each other over a football match, whereas they would let their government completely abuse and exploit them. So clearly many roads lead back to China, but you have to look what stands behind China. And, you know, China is a manufactured country. It did not naturally develop. It was a designed institution, perhaps to let us know what was coming next for ourselves, you know, because it's a Marxist, you know, society with government control, technocratic elite leadership. Is that not what they're planning in certain respects for us here in the West? So I think probably it's very clear that much influence goes back to China, but I would argue that it flows through China to the true puppet masters who sit elsewhere. And where they all sit, I cannot answer. I just know that some of them sit here in Sweden, some in the UK, some in the US, and I'm sure they are nicely spread throughout the world, because this is not a single race. This is not a single group of people who are responsible. It seems to be something a little bit more sinister.
Yeah. You mentioned that, you know, China, you know, they've got this authoritarian Marxist society. I'm pretty sure they've got lots of fiber optic cables laid down everywhere, especially in the urban and industrialized areas like Shanghai. And Klaus Schwab, whose days may be numbered at the World Economic Forum, has always sort of stated over the recent years that China is the model. Now, you talked about the UK Infrastructure Bank being responsible for the sort of capital works of instilling 5G around the UK. Do you think that the West is actually genuinely looking to implement a model just like China? What other preparations have they been making for that actuality, including the injectables? How do they link together? So what is the future of this 5G network? And is it dangerous to us, like in the Kingsman films?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're getting into a realm that I don't have such deep expertise, the science behind. But I did go and investigate it for a while because I like to go to first principles. And if you go onto the United Nations World Health Organization website investigating electromagnetic frequency, you'll find a lot of inconclusive information. And that usually means that something's dangerous, because they're not going to actually tell us it's dangerous if it were dangerous, because then they couldn't do it. 5G clearly is very, very high speed. It's what you need for androids, autonomous cars, you know, robots, unmanned weapons. You know, it is a weapon itself. And of course, because humans are bioelectric, you know, we have our own EMF, our own bio aura. This is not woo-woo. This is scientifically proven. And our brain is electric. Things like 5G can, of course, be misused in different ways. I think more likely than not, the main application is about control. And it may have some convenient secondary applications if it were true that nanotechnology was within the vaccine, which I do or don't know. Certainly the technology exists, nanochips. Samsung, I think, has developed them already 10 years ago. And they're, you know, we're talking about smaller than a pinhead. So those types of technologies certainly exist. Look at all the transhumanism, the CRISPR gene editing. There's a system called CRISPR. It means that they can write DNA like in Jurassic Park. And create. So, you know, they're already creating Franken life. But of course, they don't know the consequences. So they're creating a lot of dead ends. So, you know, if people are vaccinated, I think they do need to have concern that that vaccine program may have been used. I can't say with any certainty how, but it doesn't surprise me when we know about adjuvants, which are these things that they add to vaccines to make them more effective, that they can make people sick and do make people sick. But certainly what's coming is the bankrupting of the world, you know, and the World Economic Forum tried to convince us that that risk is gone and that everything is hunky-dory. But look at the interest rates on people's mortgages in Germany, US, UK. You know, people are being bankrupted. Look at the electricity bills. You know, they are executing their plan to a T, And they will introduce digital currencies here in Sweden. I would almost argue that Sweden is the model society. And no offense to any Swedish listeners, but you know, the things that are, we already have the digital ID, it's called Bank ID. We already have a subservient society that follows the government almost to a T. We have a system where, you know, the government knows everything about you. You can Google everyone, see what they earn, what car they drive, where they live.
Really?
Are they married? Oh, yeah. It's a transparent society. The government knows all your financial transactions. It's almost a cashless society. So all of these things that, you know, you perhaps talk about as being deep state conspiracy, many of those things have already been successfully implemented here in Sweden.
And actually, as before, and that's interesting. Imagine being offended when you told you're part of a model society. Sorry, I didn't mean to offend anyone that's Swedish. Yeah, yeah. China's a model for the rest of the world. Didn't mean to offend anyone that's Chinese. Imagine a model society that's something that you don't want to be. It's again another example of inversion. And you mentioned about how. Yeah, we've discussed about how Sweden didn't have the restrictions, the lockdowns, the mask wearing, the pressure in terms of the vaccine rollout, like the rest of the world did, or at least that's the appearance that we got here in the UK. But the reality is, Sweden was already, you said Sweden's already so far down the road with the program, with the agenda, that actually it wasn't needed because of the compliant nature of the Swedish population. How does the digital ID, bank ID that you've just mentioned, how does that work in reality? What sort of capabilities does that has, and what sort of dangers are already in that system without it being expanded further into something like China has?
Well, you cannot access anything without the bank ID. You cannot access your bank account. You cannot look at your electricity bill. You cannot apply for child benefits. You can't get married. You can't go to court. You can't get a loan. You can't access any public service. You know, and you have your personal number, which is like your 12-digit ID, and then that is linked to an app on your phone. So everyone runs around with an app on the phone. You phone the call center to complain about something. They ask you for you to activate your bank ID to authenticate yourself. So you switch that off or restrict access to it. You can't do anything. So, you know, the infrastructure to allow a misuse that shuts you off from society already exists in Sweden. People love it. To be perfectly honest, I sometimes love it because it's so convenient. But again, it gives total visibility. It's all the information going through a gateway, and that gateway can be switched off because it's outside of your personal control.
And do you need it to vote in an election?
Actually, you don't.
You don't? Interesting. Because
no,
that's the one... God, that's the one thing that left, you know, in my country. Oh, digital. No one wants ID, but everybody wants ID for voting because of election fraud. And yet the one thing that digital ID or bank ID that you've got in Sweden at the moment, it's not required for voting. I mean, I find I'm sort of quite surprised by that. But at the same time, that's good because I don't want to know. I don't want the establishment knowing that I didn't vote for them. Yeah. And my next question with the digital ID, what about illegal immigrants and immigrants into your country? Do they get given a Swedish bank ID and they have the app as well? Do they have that?
That's a very good question. All I know about refugees or unwilling or imported immigrants, because, you know, they didn't choose to come here, is that they're usually given a personnel number or a personal number. An employee ID, I guess, almost instantly. Whereas willing immigrants, including myself, it takes up to a year to get this. So, you know, they're wanting to quickly integrate imported votes or imported people or victims. Mm-hmm. You know, I call many refugees, they're just victims of geopolitical chess. And in Sweden, over the last 20 years, I think they've taken 1 million immigrants. So 10% of the refugees and so forth. So the population of Sweden has been heavily skewed by a group of people who didn't want to come here, but they didn't have a choice because Swedish guns and weapons, probably from Saab defense, were being used to shoot up their homes. And then, of course, they came to Sweden to destabilize, to be used as pawns, many of them, to destabilize society. So they could then be blamed again as scapegoats, as these, you know, to create internal conflict and hate amongst different groups.
And that's exactly the same thing that's happening in my country with the illegal immigration. They come in, they get everything that they want straight away. There is an argument to make, oh, we destabilized their countries in the first place. But the public never, ever voted for that. And just quick question then, seeing as you don't need digital IDs to vote, can the people who are in your country illegally vote?
They can vote for the local council elections. But you can only vote for the national elections if you're a citizen.
Interesting. All right, Alexander, we've come to the end of our 1 hour. It's been amazing talking to you again. It's been very, very informative. You'd be considered good value for radio, Alexander. And I'll be sure when I'm next back on air, I think this is my final week for a little while, I think. But when I am back on, I'll be sure to give you a shout and I'll try and open up those links that you sent me. Coming up, we've got Sarah Plumley, so stay right with us on TNT Radio.